Hey guys, welcome back to Wyoming Through New Eyes. My name is Carol Ann. I am a student at the University of Wyoming. I'm a senior this year working on my capstone, and I know increasingly more information about Wyoming as a state, which is super exciting. If you were with us last time, we discussed our road trip to Rock Springs, which was super fun. But if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. Feel free to visit our website, which is tkandcwuwcapstone.wordpress.com to check out our previous episodes, to look at fun pictures of us, to read a little bit more about us as people. And by us, I mean my best friend Taylor.
Hi guys, I'm Taylor. I'm the other half of this production. And today we're going to talk a little bit about our next road trip that we went on, which was to Devil's Tower National Monument. This is where I'm from before I moved to Laramie and became a University of Wyoming student and met Carol Ann. My hometown of Hewlett is 9 miles from the turnoff where you go to Devil's Tower, so I have a lot of history and experience with this place just within my life. Carol Ann has actually tagged along on several of my road trips home. So we got to stop and visit Devil's Tower actually several times while I've also visited my family.
Before we dive into this episode, I just wanted to preface that the opinions that are expressed in this episode belong to Taylor and I and us alone. Anything we say does not reflect the beliefs of University of Wyoming or the Honors College, but is our knowledge and our genuine reactions. Devil's Tower is a sacred place to different groups of people, so we just wanted to emphasize that we understand its importance and its significance, but we are just explaining the research we conducted and our reactions during our visit. This episode is a little bit different because of Taylor's personal connection. I don't really have a lot of experience in this place other than being there with Taylor. Plus, I watched an episode of Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson. They mentioned Devil's Tower momentarily, and that's my experience. Plus, Neil deGrasse Tyson's a legend anyway. He's a goat, so it never hurts to mention him.
It's okay. A lot of the people out of Wyoming have really only heard of Devil's Tower if they watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which actually they didn't film a lot of that movie there. That's a fun fact that everyone in Hewlett knows. So,
well, that's bogus.
So my mom actually grew up in Hewlett, Wyoming, and her family has been here on a ranch out towards the Montana border for several generations. And as such, I have stories from my grandmother on down about Hewlett, the places surrounding it, the Wyoming Black Hills. I graduated from Hewlett High School back in 2018. There were about 40 kids in the high school that year in a kindergarten through 12th grade building. It's the kind of place where everyone knows everyone and also probably knows your grandma and maybe your dog's name too.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all. I mean, it's not creepy. It's nice and neighborly and friendly, but like,
it's very different from like not even knowing your neighbor's names.
Yeah, my high school was bigger than the town of Hewlett. So to put that in perspective, when I got there, I was in a little bit of a shock that like we walked into the building and it was like, this is the sixth grade hallway where the 7th, 6th graders work. And this is like the 7th grade hallway. I forgot how the school was split up. But
it's shaped like an H for Hewlett.
Well, look at that. That's so exciting. Love that symbolism.
My parents are also teachers, so we did spend a decent amount of time at the school with my parents and with my brother who was in high school at the time. So that's a bit of a necessary addition there.
Yeah, shout out to Taylor's mom for having the best puns in her classrooms. I still have them on my phone. There's one that's like, will you curve my grade? And then below it is like a cursive F. So I'm so sorry whoever inspired that meme. But like, still, it's really funny.
So about Devil's Tower in particular, Devil's Tower was the first national monument, thanks to President Teddy Roosevelt. The way it was explained to me as a child is that Devil's Tower was originally like a spout of magma or an attempt to be a volcano, and it just essentially didn't get to the surface. So the more scientific way to say that is that Devil's Tower is an igneous intrusion where the magma cooled on the way to the surface. And so that's why the rock of the tower is different than a lot of the surrounding rock, because it came from cooling magma. And magma is just lava that hasn't hit the surface, essentially. Over time, with natural erosion processes like the wind, and then combined with the nearby Belfouche River. Belfouche is French. It looks like Bella Fourche. It's Belfouche, I promise.
Yeah, I was really confused when I was looking at the script and you pronounced it differently.
I could see your face. It's Belfouche. And because of that river and stuff like wind, the rock that is Devil's Tower was exposed, and now it's this key part of the landscape because it's this big rock coming out of nowhere, right? In addition to that, Devil's Tower is also a really sacred place to a lot of the Plains Indian tribes, and many of them know Devil's Tower by different names, which I'll talk a little bit more about later.
I really wish that Magic School of Us had an episode about Devil's Tower. That would make a lot more easier
that
to understand.
So cool.
Right? Like, oh my gosh. Instead of understanding
Let's
what
it is. Let's get Miss Frizzle on it.
Yes, igneous intrusion in Miss Frizzle's term.
It just means cooled down lava.
Yeah, but it's fancy. Anyway, we also took a trip up to Hewlett for Easter with a couple of friends. Shout out to Josie, Abby, and Stephanie. Hello. We did that about 2 years ago. We happened to shove 5 people into Taylor's very small car. Unfortunately, yours truly was sitting in the middle of the back
seat.
Also
had a low tire warning the whole time and just didn't tell Carol Ann
because
I knew it would freak her out.
No. This, no. Oh, I'm so mad about that. This is like 2 years ago and I'm not okay with that. Okay. Oh, my heart rate just spiked. We drove up to her house, and I guess now I'm going to have a panic attack throughout the rest of the episode that we didn't die, but it's fine. We hiked around Devil's Tower. We visited the gift shop. One of the things that I would do as a kid is I would get one of the pressed pennies. So you put in 2 quarters and a penny, and you crank the little wheel, and it comes out with like a picture of whatever you want it to be. I don't know what I did with it. 51 cents that was well spent, but definitely invested in the wrong cause.
I'll never forget that trip, not only because we had such a great time, but a bunch of our friends that we talked about when we were living in the residence halls, they weren't going to be able to go home for Easter because of flights and whatnot. And so I called my parents, and they very much said, just bring as many kids home as you can, which is just so like my parents to open their home to anyone that might need it. And it was so much fun.
I kid you not, when we got there, it was very wonderful and amazing that Taylor's family opened their home to us, which was so fun. But we all slept in Taylor's old room, and Taylor and Abby slept in a bed. Steph and Josie shared a cot, and I got a floor.
And we had another bedroom and the couch, but they all wanted to sleep in the same room so we could have a sleepover.
I don't remember that information being available to us.
I do.
It was still fun, though. I'm not the most restful sleep, but I definitely had some fun, and we have very cool pictures of this trip to remember it by. So
all right, so that's kind of our personal experience with the area, but there's definitely more information coming up with that. Let's move into Carol Ann's queries. This is that section of the show where Carol Ann gets to just kind of unload some of the pressing questions on her mind, whether they popped up 3 seconds ago or she's been wondering about it since high school.
Since high school.
Oh, yes.
Before we even knew each other, I've been wondering about these questions.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, my first pressing question of utmost importance is, what the heck is on with all those prairie dogs? I have no clue, but you drive up to Devil's Tower, and it's just like a field of little prairie dogs, like off-brand Timons, and it's very interesting.
Off-brand Timons from The Lion King. Yeah, so Devil's Tower is home to a pretty decent-sized colony, at least I think, of prairie dogs, which are a fun little rodent that belong to the squirrel family, and they live in these large groups that we call towns. So this is a prairie dog town. They can be really destructive because they make these big underground holes and tunnels, but they can also really affect the landscape, and you can kind of look at that in a few different ways. They're pretty cute, I'm not gonna lie, but there's so many of them, and I promise you they're not very nice. They also carry the plague, and they're known to be roomies with rattlesnakes and black widows, so don't get any ideas about making friends.
Black widows?
I do mean black widows. Did I not say that?
You said windows.
Black widows. The spiders. The scary ones.
The
That's
spiders.
What I
mean. Not Scarlett Johansson.
No.
The spiders.
There are 2 species of prairie dogs in Wyoming. Thank you, mammalogy class. Still can't spell mammalogy. But this colony has black-tailed prairie dogs, and I'm sure you can guess why and how you identify them.
I'm guessing they have black tails.
Good one. Good
yes,
one.
I knew I have that degree for something. Also, did you know that a group of crows is called a murder?
I do know that. I love that.
So prairie dogs live in towns, and crows live in murders, or they are murders. You know what I mean. Okay. Why is it called Devil's Tower?
So this is actually a really complex question, actually, and there are a lot of names for the tower, and a lot of those come from the Native American tribes that have a relationship with this place. A couple examples there, Mato Tepila, which is Lakota for Bear Lodge or Bear's Lodge. A couple others are things like Tree Rock. However, we think that Devil's Tower was essentially mistranslated at the get-go in English as Bad God's Tower, and we don't think that anyone called it Bad God's Tower. So Bad God's Tower, mistranslation, turned into Devil's Tower, and while you guys can't see this because it's a podcast and it's not in front of us, there's actually no apostrophe in the word devils, which was a typo in the paperwork that they've never fixed. It's a whole thing. I also want to acknowledge while we're doing this that there's still existing tension about this place being referred to as Devil's Tower, though this is the current legal name according to the government.
Wait, there's no apostrophe?
There's no apostrophe.
Oh, dang it, I typed this like 8 times and I put apostrophes in every single one of
because
them.
Because it shows ownership, but there was a typo, so it's just Devil's.
Ah, they need a copywriter. Okay, the other thing was when we were hiking around the Devil's Tower, no apostrophe, there was a very strange ladder. What's up with that?
Yeah, so Carol Ann is referring to the stake ladder you can still see on part of the tower. Way back when, a couple of local ranchers, Rogers and Ripley, literally built a ladder to the top of Devil's Tower, which is wild in itself. So that happened in 1893, and so these two ranchers are credited with the first documented ascent of the tower. Not saying it was the first climb, just that we don't know for sure anything else. And Devil's Tower is now a hugely popular climbing location for adventure seekers all over. You can't actually climb the ladder itself anymore. A lot of it's been removed. It's pretty rickety. It's also, like, super important historically, so you're not allowed to climb on it. But a fun fact about the ladders that a lot of folks don't know is that one of the rancher's wives, Linny Rogers, she climbed the tower a couple years later, so she's, like, the first official woman credited as having climbed Devil's Tower.
Heck yes, girl power! Love that. Also, I would not dream in my wildest imagination to climb that ladder.
I have a lot of friends that have done it. I'm not that brave.
I'm good. I'll be brave when it comes to trying new flavors in an ice cream shop. That's my extent.
Yeah, and so the columns that you see on the tower, they're, like, kind of hexagonal, and then on top it's, like, the size of a football field. And there are snakes and stuff up there. I don't want to. That scares me.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm going.
I'm not brave enough. I think it's amazing that people have the physical ability to do that, but I'm not brave enough.
Agreed. 100%. Yeah, with that, those are the questions that I have.
Awesome.
Pretty easy.
So there's our little introduction via Carol Ann's query and a tad a little bit about the geology, some of that stuff. And let's talk about how it's important to the United States.
Well, you said it's the first national monument, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there are lots of national monuments now, but this was our original, so to speak. According to the National Park Service site, which is a fantastic source about all of the ins and outs of Devil's Tower, to begin with, this area was proposed to be like a national park, and that didn't end up going through. And so in 1906, it ended up becoming a national monument, the first national monument. So actually, when I was 6 years old, there was a giant centennial celebration for the park. It was a whole thing.
That must have been a hoot and a half of a party.
I mean, I was 6, so I don't really remember.
Wow, Taylor getting absolutely blacked out on popsicles.
Rude.
No, I'm just kidding. But that's pretty cool, though. I really didn't know that. I thought the first national monument would be, like, in Yellowstone, like it is. Mm-hmm. But that's cool.
It is really cool that Wyoming has the first national park and the first national monument.
Heck yeah, bragging rights. Way to go, Wyoming. Go Hooks.
Heck yeah. On the other side, we would also like to acknowledge that while Devil's Tower has been recognized as Devil's Tower since 1906, again, the Plains tribes recognized the place for so many more years before that and were illegally forced off these lands. So we'll talk a little bit about this in as much as we feel we are able to, but we very much don't want to tell stories that aren't ours to tell. So there are some really amazing origin beliefs and sacred narratives surrounding Devil's Tower from the tribes that are associated with Devil's Tower, and I encourage you all to research those. I don't want to tell them because oral histories are really, really important and I don't want to mess them up. The Visitor Center also has some really great information on that. And also on that topic, I had mentioned before that Devil's Tower is a popular climbing spot and not all the tribes think that that's respectful to climb it. So right now what the Park Service is doing is that they've enacted a voluntary climbing ban during the month of June and they encourage a lot of tribal activity during that time.
Huh. I mean, June is a beautiful month. I would be fun, not to climb it, but like to participate in sacred ceremonies. At least it's not like December.
There's also a really beautiful statue like at the base of the tower called the Circle of Sacred Smoke. And a fun fact about your host, Taylor, is that she was baptized there.
Huh! Didn't know that either. How long have we been friends and I'm just learning new information about you in this podcast? Yikes.
That's the fun part, folks.
All right. After this, Taylor and I are going to go to dinner and she's going to tell me everything that she hasn't told me for the past 3 years. Like I said, these are our own opinions, but I do think that it's very interesting how much history is associated with Devil's Tower.
Oh, yeah. And we just so much want to be respectful of all of that history and not ignore any of it. So that's why we've done this.
Moral of the story, go visit it. Like, this entire podcast is giving you, like, hidden gems of Wyoming. And out of all of the gems that we've seen so far, this has got to be my top three. Like, this is one of the coolest places I've been. I didn't realize how tall it was. We started driving up to it, and it, like, popped out of nowhere. It's like, it was crazy. It's super tall, and you see pictures of it when you look it up online, but the pictures don't do it justice. It just really just is a beautiful natural phenomenon that sticks out of nowhere. Hiking around it, especially, we did do a couple hikes around it, which was fun. It's a circle. It's not very difficult of a hike. It's a paved path, and you just walk around it.
I think it's about a 1 mile loop.
Yes.
You should be okay. I did it in flip-flops. I have several times. I wouldn't recommend it, but you can do it.
Yeah, Taylor told us that we were going to go hike around Devil's Tower, and I definitely, like, packed, like, extra water bottles and sneakers, and, like, I was ready for a hike, and it just ended up being, like, a nice circular walk. And then we ended up scrambling on some boulders next to it. It's just kind of fun to climb on some rocks and to hang out outside with all of our friends. So that was super fun. We also saw birds and flowers, which are always cool, too.
Yeah, so erosion's still, like, very active in the area. That's not a process that really starts. We've got this boulder field that's related to the erosion. And the boulder field is, like, a big favorite for everyone because you can just scramble around and climb. And you can essentially go to the top of the boulder field where the base of Devil's Tower begins before you have to register your climb. So if you don't want to register to actually climb this giant tower, you can just hang out in the boulder field and have a great time. That's what I've always done because I'm not brave enough to climb or tough enough.
I was exhausted climbing around like 1/4 of the distance to Devil's Tower. There was no possible way you could get me to climb all of those boulders and then climb up Devil's Tower. Maybe if I won $1 million and you carried me up, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, that was kind of our portion about the history of Devil's Tower, but now we're going to kind of transition into a more personal segment. We're going to talk about Hewlett. It was super fun. I liked Hewlett a lot. We, like Taylor said, I've driven up with her multiple times. I think the sole reason that Taylor wanted me to come was less of to see her home and more that she needs company on the drive up, because it's a long drive, and if you leave at dusk, there's lots of critters wandering around.
We did do that once. We made the mistake of coming home at night on a full moon, and if any of you have ever driven a lot on the full moon, critters are just real active, and so we tried really hard not to hit a fox, and then we tried really hard not to hit a skunk, and then we tried really hard not to hit a raccoon, and we missed all of those, and then about a mile from city limits, we accidentally hit a skunk, and it was really, really sad.
It was sad, but my nose, gosh, guys, I've never smelled something so bad as the poor skunk. I feel very terrible and I was very sad, but it was the aftermath that I was sad about. Like,
my dog enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did not. I felt like I needed to go take a bath in tomato paste to get it all off.
It is definitely a pretty long drive. It's about 5 hours, but there's a lot of really cool sightseeing right as you get into that sort of northeastern corner of Wyoming. It's a very windy road, so much so that my cousins that live in Denver, when they come up, they kind of get motion sick just because they're used to driving in straight lines. And that means you generally have to drive a little slower because you don't want to hit any wildlife on the road like we've been talking. But it's also worth it to drive slower to just take in a lot of the views.
Yeah, it was a really pretty drive and lots of cool canyons. And it was just fun. It was just overall fun. When we got to the town, something I did not know, Hewlett does not have any traffic lights.
Our county actually didn't have traffic lights until like a year or two ago.
I don't get that. I have a traffic light coming out of my neighborhood.
That's wild.
I know. Also, the fact that you can walk everywhere, that's a miracle to me. So we were sitting in Taylor's house, and then I'm a breakfast person. I'm very much reliant on eating as soon as I wake up. Taylor is not. And so as I was trying to be very polite without being very hangry, but we needed to go get food. And we walked down the hill from her house to a restaurant at the bottom of the hill. That was so easy and so fun. And, like, you just walk to the football stadium. It's a field with some bleachers. And you walk to the bar. And you walk to the grocery store. Like, it's all walkable. And if you wanted to drive, like, by the time you turn the car on, you're, like, there. Like, you turn it on, it's 1 minute drive.
Yeah. It's definitely different than growing up, I think, anywhere else. By the time I was about 7, I could go to the grocery store by myself on my bike during most of the year, which is so wild to think about now. I was like, I wouldn't send a 7-year-old anywhere without adult supervision.
Especially not with money to a grocery store. Do you know what my haul would be from a grocery store at 7 years old? Ice cream and candy.
Oh, yeah. And the thing about that is, like, first of all, it was a little bit of a different time even now. Like, now, like, kids go to the grocery store, but they definitely bring, or, like, in a group or have an adult. But also, it's not that I didn't even have supervision. It's that everyone in town kind of collectively supervises you. Like, if I was ever somewhere I wasn't supposed to be as a kid, you betcha the receptionist at the clinic or the lady working the bank on Main Street, they were calling my mom, like, hey, is Taylor supposed to be out here?
Oh, gosh.
That's how small of a town it is.
It's like having 20 parents.
Or one time our dog escaped and she made it downtown to the bar because there were all sorts of people there who were willing to pet her. So we just get a call. Hey, your dog's in the bar.
Wow.
That happened.
That's so small town. I love it. Okay, the other thing about the town, the mountain lions. So we do have mountain lions in Colorado Springs. We're not that suburban. I've been pressing that I'm very city. But
they've also had bears in her neighborhood, which is wild.
A bear came and knocked down our hummingbird feeder. I was not there for it. But it was very interesting to get that video from my neighbors. It was very crazy. But we drove up to Hewlett at one point, and Taylor's dad pulled me outside saying, like, listen. And you could hear the mountain lions that were right next to Taylor's house. They weren't gonna come.
We were a safe distance away.
Yeah,
but you can hear them from a long ways off.
It was crazy because I've seen pictures and they've seen them near neighborhoods near mine, but that close.
Yeah, and it's really weird because if you hear a mountain lion on the internet, usually it's like a woman, and it's a scary woman scream. But what they were doing there, and eventually what happened is, the Game and Fish had to relocate a mom and a set of kittens, essentially. So they were talking to each other. And they have kind of like a chuff or a chirp that they use to talk to each other. And that's what we were hearing. And it sounds innocent enough, but for whatever reason, like, something in the back of your brain is like, no, that's a predator. And, like, it kind of runs up your spine.
Yeah.
It's kind of freaky.
It's like the feeling like something's watching you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh.
Yeah. This is a pretty interesting topic, actually. The Black Hills, which are mostly in South Dakota and also kind of bleed over into the little chunk of Wyoming that has my hometown and Devil's Tower, they have quite a rebounding mountain lion population. So much so that I'm currently working on a final project in one of my classes that has to do with preventing and mitigating encounters with mountain lions. And my personal connection there, other than being able to hear them out of my house, is that a mountain lion ate my cat.
Yeah, that was a sad day.
Carol Ann took me to get cupcakes that day. I've also learned to keep my cats indoors. A1 recommend, best way to prevent them from meeting unfortunate ends.
Yeah, I agree with that. I quite enjoyed the cupcakes, but getting the news that Taylor's cat died, it was really sad because I really liked Taylor's cat.
She was really mean, but she was a good cat. And this is also where our academic section comes in. So we've got this bigger population of mountain lions over in the Black Hills, and we've got a lot of really interesting ongoing research happening because we've got this nice population, which is super cool. One study from Daniel J. Thompson and Jonathan A. Jenks found that female mountain lions tend to stay in the same area, but males do what we call dispersal. They go a lot further, so they find themselves a new home, essentially, far from where they were born. One of the males in this study went from being collared in the Black Hills all the way to Oklahoma. It's just wild. That's a long ways to disperse. Like,
I don't
want to
drive from Wyoming to Oklahoma.
I know. And so it's really cool that they got to do this, and like that this population they were studying had this super cool thing happening, and that I'm from this place. All of these things come together. So there's a lot of implications here with predator management and ecology for how we look at populations and the boundaries of populations. And mountain lions are sort of recolonizing as they go west. And so, I don't know, do you then consider that lion part of an Oklahoma population? Or do you consider it part of a South Dakota population? This is just me, like, speculating. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we now have to think about because now we have this cool research that showed us stuff we didn't know was happening.
Yay, science.
Yes, this is a paper, actually, that I've read more times than I can count. First of all, because it hits close to home. It's exciting to have stuff in the Black Hills. And second, because I was introduced to this paper when I was taking a class from one of my all-time favorite professors. And now I work under one of his PhD students. So dreams really do come true.
Like, there's just a rainbow above your head when you said that. That was wonderful. Thank you. Dreams do come true. Hashtag yay Monteith.
No, but for real, the kind of research I've been able to take part in through this university has been really incredible. And I can really only thank so many people that are part of this Monteith graduate research group. Kevin Monteith himself, who is the professor, as well as Taylor Lashar and Rebecca Rafferty and Rhiannon Jacobpack, all great people that have gotten me some amazing experiences over the last few days. Few years, yes.
Not days.
I did spend a decent amount of time running some deer analysis today, so.
That's just cool. Like, I'm sorry. It's just interesting. I very know a little about deer, so it's fun to hear you talk about it.
I love deer.
You love their feet.
And one of the really cool things about the Black Hills is that we have white-tailed deer and mule deer, and a lot of places don't have both.
The more you know. Nice. Okay, the other thing that I thought was really interesting.
About Hewlett?
About Hewlett. I was raised in a very college football family. Like, on every Saturday, we would have all of the football games on TV. We would go to football games in person. That's how I picked the University of Wyoming, because we have a football team. True story. We went back to Hewlett for Taylor's brother's homecoming game, and Hewlett plays six-man football.
Six-man football is such an icon of, like, small Midwestern towns. Nebraska also has a six-man division, and it's really entertaining. So I should start with, Wyoming has no professional sports. We have one single four-year university, this University of Wyoming that we both attend. Everyone goes really, really hard for the University of Wyoming Cowboys. And then there's the high school divisions that are also super popular. Six-man is a whole different game. And I will defend it to my dying breath because I think it's wildly entertaining.
I was in a doubtful position about how cool six-man football was. I was thinking mentally it was going to be a pickup game of football. It was going to be a bunch of high schoolers wearing t-shirts that say Hewlett High School running around a football field. And then you get there. And I've never seen parents so intimidating, guys. Like,
also, a very small town thing is that we have, actually, it's an 80-yard football field when you play six-man football. And these are not, like, stadiums. They're just grass fields for the most part. There's a couple fields in Wyoming that aren't grass, but we have this grass field. Parents walk the sidelines while they're cheering. Like, at the bigger schools, that gets security called on you if you try to get that far or that close to the game. But no, that's completely normal in these small towns.
It was so fun to watch. I was so excited. Although, my heart did pump a little faster because of, I was so scared for the quarterback. Like, in 11-man football, you have an entire line of really big offensive linemen to give you time to make a play. That doesn't happen in 6-man football. You need a couple people down the field to pass to, or you need people running, like, different plays, and it was scary to watch. There's so much happening. It was very fun.
It's a very, very fast-paced game. It's also typically really high-scoring. Like, average, I would say, is, like, 50 points for each team. Clearly, lots of difference depending on who's winning and how well they're winning, but completely different game, super entertaining to watch. If you're ever in a small Wyoming town, I would recommend checking out, like, the high school football scene, because it's super cool. One year, when my brother was in high school, they made the second round of the playoffs, and they had never played that far into November before, and so it was dark when their practice was going on. We don't have a lighted field, so it's this super small school, so they drove all their trucks and cars onto the track and lit them up with headlights while they practiced in the dark.
That looks like a scene from Footloose.
It was super cool.
Like, I don't doubt it. My biggest lessons that I've learned from not only being friends with Taylor, but from doing this podcast, is that you cannot make fun of or doubt small town life. Like, it is a culture of its own. You cannot mess with it because it is super fun, super exciting. And the people, like, you sit there and the parents are so excited. And, okay, I was a cheerleader in high school. So they had, like, a little cheer team with all these little girls. And I'm like, I love this so much.
Well, we don't have enough kids in the high school, really, to have, like, a high school cheer team. So we have all these little junior high and elementary kids. And they're actually really good at what they do. And some of them do the whole stunting thing. And they raise a ton of money. Like, it's a really cool program that we have because we just don't have enough kids for it to go on in the high school.
No, but it's so cute. And it's so amazing how your town is so small, but you're still able to do all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think that a small town, you can't play football because you don't have enough players. Yeah. Joke's on you. Six-man football, which is, I can't compare it to 11-man. I'm sorry. I just can't.
It's a completely different game. No, and I think a lot of people kind of have that misconception, is that we're just not going to be able to do things in small towns. And the thing is that, like, the community comes together in those small towns, and that means we get to do all sorts of things. You just do more than one thing. So I played volleyball and played basketball, and I was student council president and president of FBLA, and I was in the band and the choir, and I missed all sorts of school for school activities. But I got to do all of these really cool things that gave me really awesome perspectives, because I got to meet people from all walks of life, even just within my teeny little Wyoming town.
That's amazing. You're an overachiever.
Oh, I really was.
Wow. I mean, look at us. We found each other. Two overachievers sitting here talking about six-man football.
Which I did not expect to be kind of the highlight of this podcast, but if we're talking about some of our cultural differences and how we grew up, this is such a great way to frame it.
No, it really is. Our high school football had tailgates, and our football team made it severe dent in the school population because we had C team, which was freshmen, JV, and then varsity, and it was just crazy to me to think that our senior squad of football players is larger than the football team at Hewlett.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure.
But that was crazy. Anyway, long tangent, but this brings us to the close of our episode, which has been wonderful. We learned so much about the Native American aspects of Devil's Tower, the U.S. history aspects of Devil's Tower, the first national monument, super fun. But of course, our podcast wouldn't be complete without our lovely Taylor ranting for 3 minutes about a topic of her choice. And this is called Curiosity Corner. So with that, Taylor, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, 3 minutes on the clock, go.
Today's Curiosity Corner brings us a fact that I actually didn't know until about an hour ago, and I changed everything I was going to talk about because I thought it was wild. So President Theodore Roosevelt was big into natural history. That's well documented. We actually don't know for sure that he ever specifically visited Devil's Tower, which is wild because growing up in the area, Teddy Roosevelt is a big name, and he is why we have the tower designated as a national monument. That is something that he specifically did. And that brings a ton, and I mean a ton, of tourism to our area, which keeps our little tour towns afloat. As a high school kid, I probably waited on thousands of visitors to the tower while I was serving at a little restaurant in Hewlett. Shout out to the Ponderosa that fed and employed me for the better part of 4 years. But anyway, back to my point, we know that Roosevelt visited the area and a lot of the towns nearby, but so it seems reasonable to say that he probably saw the tower, but we don't have any documented proof that he actually went there. Thanks again to the National Park Service site telling me this, because I had no idea, and I think that's insane. Another fun fact I'd love to talk about, and this kind of brings out my wildlife biology side of things, there are a lot of yearly and seasonal closures on the different climbing routes at the tower because Devil's Tower is a nesting site for peregrine falcons, which are equal parts super cool, only slightly terrifying. They're super fast, they're big, you know, prey birds. The idea of these closures is to protect and work on the conservation of this species while they're mating and hatching and being raised. And so when they're in these vulnerable young stages. And it also protects climbers because peregrine falcons can be really aggressive and they've got big old claws and really sharp beaks like many birds of prey. So there's a dude that has guided climbs in the area for a really long time. Crazy Frank, in his heyday, probably went up and down the tower at least once every single day during the summer. He's a guide. We call him Crazy Frank. That is how his name has always been, because he climbs the tower all the time. And all of my climbing friends, because I'm not a climber, report that the peregrine falcons actually recognize his helmet, which will kind of circle. And that's an unverified report, but it makes a lot of sense given how smart birds like that are. And also it's terrifying to think that the birds recognize you as a constant presence over there and the, like, would recognize your climbing helmet. That scares me immensely. But I'm also a little bit irrationally afraid of birds. These are really cool birds. Doesn't mean I need to hang out with one.
Since when have you been irrationally afraid of birds?
Always.
Okay, like I said, we're going out to dinner and we're going to talk about everything I don't know about Taylor.
I'm a mammal person.
I'm a mammal person. Oh, that's amazing.
I like mammals.
Okay, that is your time. Do you have anything else to add?
I think that fit really well into our about 3 minutes.
Yeah, no, you did it. If you just heard my phone go off, that's what that was.
Beautiful.
3 minutes. Peregrine falcons. Jeez Louise. We have birds of prey that sit on the lampposts out, like, on the interstate in Colorado, and they just look scary. Like, they don't look friendly, and you see one of them flying, and you're like, wow, that's a terrifying thought. Also, the fact that Teddy Roosevelt didn't, like, we have no confirmed proof.
Right? That blew my mind.
I mean, I
learned that today.
I mean, I can kind of get cameras are kind of early in that time period. Radio hadn't really been a popular thing. That, you know, this is 1906 when it became a national monument. And this is before World War II. This is before, like, 1910s. Like, that's super, super early in time. And photographs had just been invented in, like, the 1860s, 1870s. Wow, I really need to go check my notes on that and make sure that's accurate. But that's my best guess, because I definitely remember taking classes on photography in Civil War era. I'm a comm major, guys. As usual, all the information we talked about, as well as any sources we used in this creation of podcasts, like the National Park site, all of that's going to be on our website, which is tkandcwuwcapstone.wordpress.com. We also did post some of our pictures from previous trips, so I have pictures of us bouldering around. So if you see three extra girls, that's Josie, Stephanie, and Abby.
Surprise! They get a feature.
Yay! We have more than just, like, one set of pictures, so you get to enjoy young Taylor and young Carolyn looking like freshmen in this photo. But yeah, be sure to check those out.
Alrighty, folks, thank you for tuning into this episode, which has this really special place in my heart because this is essentially my hometown episode. We hope you enjoyed this trip back home as much as I did. And until next time, we're signing off. This is Wyoming Through New Eyes.